You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And it's been a scorcher of a week, hasn't it? It's been the highest recorded temperature ever in Bogota at 25 degrees. Which is not hot, really, is it? Especially if you're from Texas, like my guest this week, Stephanie. Stephanie's here with me, but we're in her social coffee house. So those of you who have listened to this show in the past will know that I do come here a lot, and I do host a lot of my interviews here. But if you are coming to Bogota, I recommend the social coffee house. We'll be talking about this further. But before we talk to Stephanie, remember that this show, episode 174, is brought to you by Sitel Colombia. Sitel Colombia is looking for employees. They have jobs available. Are you bilingual? Are you in Bogota? Do you have a legal work visa? Because Sitel has varied versions of contracts and very, very interesting hours. So check them out on Facebook, that's Sitel Colombia, and write to them at recruiting.co@sitel, and you can find more information about that there. So good option for those of you there here in Colombia, Sitel Colombia. Anyway, so we are here on episode 174 with Stephanie. Stephanie is Colombian. She's a Bogotana, but left Colombia some years ago, only to return to her parents' great disdain. But Stephanie, welcome on Columbia Calling.
Thank you, Richard. It's such a pleasure to be here today.
You're most welcome, Stephanie. So tell me a little bit about yourself. You are a thoroughbred Bogotana.
Yeah.
And now you have this coffee house, but it wasn't all so smooth running. You guys, you were born here, you grew up for a few years, and then in 1998, you left.
Yep.
That's right. Tell us a little bit about what Colombia back in 1998.
Well, okay, so I was about 10 years old when I left. I think my view of everything was obviously from a child's perspective, but I do remember it being a little bit rough. I grew up down in the south, and I remember some car bombings, and I remember mostly I think it was a lot of insecurity in the city, which fortunately we still have that, but I think it was still more extreme back then. And I do know that I remember most people here were Colombian. They were not a lot of expats,
no.
And there were a lot of homeless kids in the streets, which is something that you don't really see very much anymore as well.
This is true, actually, and especially when you think of the center to the south, there would have been a lot. And I've spoken to people who were adopted from that time as well, who were sort of handed into police stations, homeless children. But do you still have family in South Bogota?
I do. I have a lot of family. I have about 21 cousins on each side. So they're all spread all throughout the city. I have, you know, some family members are doing very well economically, and some are not so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're all over the place. I know that I grew up. I don't exactly remember.
No.
So for like the first part of my life, I lived in the south, but then we moved to like the 132 area.
Yeah.
And so like in my last couple of years here in Bogota, I lived in the north. But I don't. I think it was like Kennedy. I want to say is where I grew up. And I remember it was nice. It was a beautiful new complex, and it was safe. There was never, like, I never had a fear of anyone breaking into my home or anything like that. But, yeah.
Interesting. I mean, really interesting to hear these things. It's nice. And in 1998, and we have the exact date, your parents said, we're leaving.
December 1st, 1998, we flew out.
You flew out. But was there something that triggered this departure?
Yes. my two older sisters, I have two half-sisters, they're about 14 years older than me.
Wow.
And they took the first, like, jump to move to America. They had college careers and everything, and they just kind of went looking for more hope, I guess, and they found it there. And so they were settled in Houston, Texas, and they started convincing my parents that it was a good idea for us to do the same thing. Economically, things were a little rough. My mom and my dad didn't have a college education, and so they worked really hard. My dad used to work for a pasta company called Doria.
Yeah, Doria, the big pasta company.
Yeah. And he was a truck driver for them, and he was kidnapped. And he was kidnapped and taken around the whole city, and the final stop was a cemetery. They put a gun to his head, and they said, "Do you have any last words?" And so, you know, first they drove him around the whole city and tried to lose him, but he knows he's a driver, so he knows exactly where he's at all times. So then he decided to lie and say, "Okay, I'm lost." And then they drop him off there, and he said, "I will say goodbye. I want to say goodbye to my children." And I think the guy kind of felt bad about that, and so they just left him there and took his truck and stuff. And then after that, I think it was a hard thing for my family to recover from something like that. Emotionally, I remember coming back from school in the Ruta, and there were police patrols everywhere, and there was just lights everywhere. And my sister and I had this feeling that something happened on our way there, and so it was just, it was rough. And then after that, I think that kind of like marked our life quite a bit. And so then we were always just afraid after that, you know, like, are we actually safe to go out of the city? Are we, you know, safe to do anything? And so I think that kind of hit it off. But then a couple of years went by. And then, but I think they always had that mentality, like, we're not here for a long time, but I don't think they told us kids that. So to me, it was a surprise that we were moving to America. So I remember the last time here, we basically went to the school to pick up a progress report or a report card. And they said, "Okay, say goodbye to all your friends. This is the last time you see them."
Wow.
And so I didn't really understand. And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Yeah, we're moving to the USA, so say goodbye." And so it was kind of sad, obviously, because we're leaving our friends behind. But at the same time, he said, "We're going to the USA." So I was like, "All right, rock on," you know? So,
I think the seriousness is it would possibly be lost on a child this age. But let's just reflect there. Your father, it was an express kidnapping. It was for whatever amount of money, but he managed to pull the emotional heartstrings of his kidnapper. So I'd like to say goodbye to my children. And I think that's a very good thing to do, because in Colombia, the family, you know, forever, even your kidnapper, is important. Now, how interesting is that? Tell me one thing. Are you still in touch with some of those friends from back in the day?
There's a girl that we were two people. I came back to do kind of like a vision trip or of a potential move to Colombia. And I was in a restaurant, and she said, "Stephanie." And I was like, "What in the world?" And I was like, "I'm sorry, you have me confused with someone else." And she was like, "Stephanie Bejarano." And I was like, "That's me.
Yeah.
I don't know you." She's like, "Yeah, like we were in sixth grade together. You know, you don't remember me. I mean, I was really small. I had no idea who she was." And she reminded me of stories of us, and I didn't remember her. I think I blocked a lot of my, like, the last years here for some reason. I still don't understand why. But she remembered me. And so she put me in contact with other people. And so we've talked about having a meeting, a reunion here at the coffee shop.
Nice.
From my middle school days.
But that's really amazing.
Yeah, I don't know how
she... happening in a restaurant in Bogota. Someone says, "You're Stephanie."
Yeah.
Wow. That's really cool. That kind of... it was meant to be.
Yeah.
But what a terrifying experience. So your parents are like, "That's it, we're leaving. Say goodbye to your friends," and basically you pack up your belongings. I imagine you leave a lot behind because you can't take anything, and you fly on the direct flight to Houston, and that's it. Your new life is there from the 1st of December 1998.
Yep.
And prior to that, you've almost got like you suggested, a mental block on what was before. And so you grow up, let's say, a Latina but in the U.S., growing up as a U.S. kid as well. I mean, like a lot of people say, 1998, that's Bill Clinton, right, as a president, I think. Yeah, because 2001 would have been then George Bush, George W. Bush, so 1998. So the Clinton years, so more tolerant towards immigrants and so on, but you were an illegal. Mm-hmm. Did this present you problems back then?
So we came in as tourists, and so back in the day, the laws weren't as strict on things, which was a little helpful. We did petition for asylum, but it got denied, and through that denial process, they granted us some document that said that we could pay our taxes. So they gave us a tax ID number, but denied our social security number, and so from day one, we were taxpayers, which I think in the long run it helped us out.
But if you don't have a social security, you can't work.
Right, you can't work, but we can pay taxes.
that doesn't sound so fair.
But with this document, we were able to get our identity cards.
Yes.
And so we were not undocumented people. We had documents, and that helped us out a lot.
Immensely.
Now, I didn't speak English when I moved there. And that, I think, was really hard because we didn't know that they did schools by zonings and things like that. And so, of course, going from here to there, we didn't go to the best area at first. And we went to a very ghetto school, if you will.
That's what they call them there. Probably the term, isn't it?
No. Yeah. And it was hard because it was a lot of just very... the word that comes to mind is thug. A lot of like thug people. I grew up here going to private schools, private Catholic schools, and so it was extreme change for me. I thought I was going to go to America and everybody's going to be blonde, blue eyes, and even like a beach or something. But it wasn't. It was a bunch of people who were in gangs and who already had it out for me and my sister because we looked different, because we dressed different, and we talked different.
Yeah.
And so even within the community of Hispanics, we faced a lot of racism because we're from Colombia. And so all the jokes about the cocaine and, you know, Pablo Escobar and all that stuff, it was really rough. I remember going home crying just from so much of this. Because to me, if you think about everything that has happened to Colombia, it is not something that we're proud of. It's not something that we rejoice in. We're like, oh yeah, do you know how much drug-like stuff we have? It's something that, man, like family members have died because of this, and it has directly impacted everything. And so it's not a joking matter, but of course we're, you know, like 11 years old, and so kids sometimes, they just say things.
Cruel.
And actually, you know, the huge earthquake had just happened in Armenia.
Yeah.
And they were making jokes about that. And so I would walk by the classrooms and they would shake the desks and be like, oh, look, don't you feel like you're home? And things like that. And so, you know, that was one thing. But then quickly after that, we moved from that school to another school because there were threats on our lives, because the boys looked at us too much. And I don't know, because they called us fresas, which is the Mexican term for preps, which in Bogota would be gomelas.
Preppy kids.
You know, just because of that, they had it out for us. And so we moved areas, and then we found, like, the America that we were hoping for. And that was, I think, it was easier in some extent, but then I went from being like, you know, one of hundreds of Hispanics to being one out of like 10 in our school.
Yeah.
And I liked it. I loved it because, I mean, I felt like I was an American. I learned English in 6 months because I didn't want to be with that person that didn't understand. And so I would go home every day and just memorize words and pronunciation. And at this next school, I found this one friend, and she, still my friend, she came to see me not too long ago, seventh grade, and she decided she was going to teach me pronunciation because she didn't want people to make fun of me for the way that I spoke. And so we would sit there, and she would work with me on sounds of letters, you know? One quickly funny example, we're in math class, eighth grade, and I'm still learning words, you know, you don't learn all the words, and so I found this word on something, it was written down on something, and it was the word nipples. Well, I didn't know what a nipple was, and I pronounced it nipple, and so I said, what is a nipple? Like, I don't know what a nipple is. And so they said, you know, ask the teacher. So I raised my hand and I asked our math teacher, who's a football coach, what a nipple was. And of course everybody remembers me for that moment. So then I learned how to pronounce the E correctly.
Yeah.
The I.
That would certainly speed things up. So just a quick reflection there. The first place you moved to in Houston, what district was it? Do you remember?
Charlestown.
Charlestown. And most of the other kids were Mexican and Central American?
Yeah, and so, black.
And black. African American. You're looking at the Mara Salvatruchas as well. You're looking at the 18.
Well, I don't know about the Salvatruchas. I think that's a little bit more hardcore for other
more.
Schools. Uh-huh. And yeah, Los Angeles more. We had other gangs that were, I really don't know which is like the gang of Houston, but I know that it wasn't that.
Okay.
It wasn't, like, it was bad for me, that school, but it wasn't one of the worst ones in Houston, by any means.
But then we moved to
Spring Branch ISD.
Yeah, and an amazing friend who really brought you through it.
Yeah.
Really brought you through it.
She walked me through everything.
An incredible story, Stephanie. Incredible story of triumph, basically, for not only for you, your sister, your parents, and everything. An incredible story. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with the next segment of this show, talking to Stephanie, talking here in the social coffee house. So what you can hear in the background is the coffee grinds and happy people chatting and drinking good coffee. So do check it out. Remember that this episode, 174 of Columbia Calling, has been brought to you by Citel Columbia. Check out the Facebook page for openings there at the company here in Bogota. But don't go away. We'll be right back talking further about Stephanie's experiences, not only in the US, but coming back to Columbia, which is happening more and more now. So don't go away. I'm Richard McColl. This is Columbia Calling. We'll be right back. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling, episode 174, and we're having the most fascinating conversation with Stephanie, one of the owners of the Social Coffee House, along with her husband, Alex. It's a great place. It's on the exact address is Carrera Quinta, that's Fifth Avenue, number 66A24. So it's on this sort of little kind of grassy square area just off the Septima, not far from the 72, but a really nice area of Rosales, a great place. You can come and work, Wi-Fi, great coffee, and we'll talk about that further, but please come down because they're doing a great job of having it is a social coffee house. So the name is what they're offering and the name sits perfectly. But Stephanie, we've been talking to you about this. You were transplanted from, let's say, Bogota to Houston, and we got to the stage where you were at a high school in a nice area of Houston, and you have this amazing friend who's teaching you the intonation, how to pronounce the words. In 6 months, you learn English, and I just want to ask you really a little bit about this. You must have had a crisis of identity. You're the Colombiana, you don't fit in with the Mexicans and let's say and other immigrants in a gang area of Houston, and then you go to a nice area of Houston, but you're the Latina.
Yeah.
It's got to be tough, but now you're back in Colombia. Let's jump a bit, because we'll just recap. 1998 was the departure from Colombia. You became an American citizen in 2005. You had documents, so let's not get Mr. Trump on your back. You had documents anyway until then, but you were an American citizen. You went to the University of Houston, Hispanic studies. I mean, you really had all the opportunities, let's say, perhaps your parents may not have had. I don't know. It's something we can explore. But in 2016, you decided to come back to Colombia. Let's throw this out there. How did your parents react?
Right, they cried. My husband and I have moved around a lot, so it's not like we always lived in Houston. I got married at 18, so right after high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Oklahoma, and then we bounced around from place to place, including Africa. And so I think to a certain extent, I lived in Mozambique, and to a certain extent, they were happy that it was in Africa. At least it was something that they're more comfortable, like, coming to visit. It's a 4-hour flight, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
But to them, it was kind of like a slap in their face.
Yeah.
For my dad, he said, you know, we made this huge sacrifice for you guys. This was the same thing that happened when I told him I was getting married as well.
Okay.
And they said, we made this huge sacrifice to sell everything, jumped into this unknown land of sacrifice, of hard work, of mistreatment, especially for them.
Sure.
so that you could have opportunities and so that you could go to school and go to college and do everything that we weren't able to do. And now you're like just dropping everything.
Yeah.
That was for like marriage. And so I said, you know, I'm going to go to school just because I get married is when it stops.
Yeah.
But then also when we moved back, it's like, now you're taking your children back. Like we took you as children out of that place. And now you're going back with your babies. Like, what are you doing? That was kind of the reaction. And why are you so crazy?
How old are your children?
I have a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old.
So they're small, but they're not tiny.
Yeah,
they're small,
right,
and not tiny.
Yeah.
So they're adaptable.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, your parents are like, no,
yeah,
no.
What are you doing? Right.
So they had a hissy fit.
Right.
But you can understand their point
Absolutely.
Of view. You can understand their point of view. But you had been visiting Colombia for a while previously.
Yes.
You'd come down, you'd done some, let's say, reconnaissance.
Yeah.
The country's changing. The country, we can see ourselves here for a bit. But your husband Alex is from Oklahoma, or
from Houston, Texas.
From Houston as well.
Mm-hmm.
And how, I mean, how has he found the transition?
Well, Richard, it's really interesting because I think my husband is actually meant to be Colombian. I think I struggle way more to adjust
right.
to everything. To him, he's like, it's like, I don't know, he was always meant to be here.
Really?
So if fits.
He's happy.
He's happy here. I don't understand it. I really don't. Like, people ask me, he likes mute, he likes sancocho de gallina, he likes vallenato, he likes, you know, those things that I don't even like.
I
cannot
vallenato.
Handle any of that.
Everybody knows
He's teaching my children vallenato, okay? He just loves it. And he loves the culture. He loves the history. He's one of those people that knows more about Colombian than most Colombians, you know?
Yeah.
Because when he met me, he found out I was Colombian, and so he decided that he was going to make it a point to know everything there was to know about Colombia. And so he did, and so he fell in love
That's
with the
perfect.
Culture.
What a
yeah.
wonderful, what a wonderful way that he wooed you through his knowledge
yeah.
of Colombia.
yeah. Him and his dad, they both did it. So,
but that's
yeah.
amazing. But actually, we had a conversation, Alex and I, off mic the other day, and he said, oh, you've got a place in Mompox, and he knew all about it.
Yeah.
And I said, but you've been? And he could
no.
But he did know all about
knew,
it.
Yeah.
So how cool was that for me? It was like, you know, but that's great. I mean, that's so you were down here, you brought your children down here, but you'd been down on reconnaissance trips and you but you saw a change in Colombia, right?
Oh, absolutely. I came back the moment I was able to leave America, I started coming back every year
right.
To visit my family that I hadn't seen in 7 years and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, like, well, the first time we came back, I remember walking from the airport to somewhere with my husband. It was at nighttime. I don't remember what we were doing. But I remember that I saw some homeless people, and I got scared. So I was like,
right.
we're going to get kidnapped. Like, my husband is American. Like, they're going to take him. Like,
yeah.
I was so afraid. And he's so relaxed walking the streets, and I'm, like, holding his arm, like, for dear life. And then I realized, oh, man, this is not, like, wow, there's a lot of expats here. There's
yeah.
a lot of Europeans. There's
yeah.
a lot of other people here. And actually, the first thing that I noticed is that there weren't children on the streets anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's still beggars in the corners
sure.
and things, but it wasn't like what I had in mind from
yeah.
my small childish mind. I remember kids sleeping on the side streets, like in homes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized, like, this is different. And then, obviously, way past that, like years later, like every single year that we came back, we saw more improvement and we
mm-hmm.
saw growth. And even just like in the cleanup of the city, like downtown area was awful. And I mean,
yeah.
it's not the best now, but they redid it, you
yeah.
know, and you can tell that they're investing in the city. They're investing in slowly but surely
yeah.
things are changing. But economy wise, and just the fact that people feel safe, like we're in magazines now and people are like, oh, Colombia is the next best place to go to. I mean, you could have never said that like 12 years ago, you know.
Well, so, every magazine now has because of the of course the peace agreement with the FARC guerrillas has meant that every travel magazine or any sort of culture magazine are putting Colombia on the map this year. Of course, something we've known for a long time, but
yeah.
equally it takes time for the general populace
right.
out there. But it's like Colombia's on the cusp.
Yeah.
But the Colombians, I think, things are going, it's slow, but in the right direction always. And so this is fun. I mean, this is fun to be involved in that. And so you found this opportunity and said, well, let's come back, right? I mean, but what made you think of a, let's say, a coffee house?
Yeah, so we We lived in Austin, Texas, and Austin, Texas is a place where there's coffee shops in every corner.
Well, it's the hipster capital of the U.S., I think, outside of San Francisco, maybe.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's a very much like, yeah, you said it, hipster culture, lots of coffee, and so, and everybody's obsessed with Colombian coffee. Mm-hmm. And so for one of, like, I think it was Mother's Day, I asked Alex to buy me a little espresso machine for home use, and then I started figuring out like how to use it. So I went onto YouTube and found a bunch of videos about it, and found out there's this whole world about coffee, like barista competitions and worldwide and all these things. And I'm like, this is awesome. And so then that was just kind of in the back of my head. And so then we came here to do a church plant and other things, mm-hmm. but we said like it would be a great way to be financially stable here on our own to do something with the coffee.
Yeah.
As we came here and started looking into it, it was even more awesome. This wasn't supposed to happen until next year. but I met the owner of Catación Pública. His name is Jaime Luque. And he just poured information onto me. And
really?
Just his love and his passion for coffee. And then I quickly realized that coffee and peace go hand in hand.
Yes.
And as the peace talk was happening and all that stuff, like, I went to Corferias and they were having an expo on specialty coffee, and I met with some of the caficultores and we talked to them, and it was just so beautiful because they were like, you know, Stephanie, before on our farms there was cocaine and there was death and there was awful, like, it was this old man that was talking to me. And so he was saying, like, it just meant violence and it meant heartache. And then, like, they took away this cocaine field and put in coffee. And now there is hope and there is life and there is joy. And he cried, and of course I'm crying. And I'm so how beautiful to be a part of something that is changing the nation. And most Colombians don't realize that this is happening. But if you're in the world of coffee, not just having a coffee shop, but actually, like, dealing with specialty coffee and dealing with, like, the people that are working the land, it's beautiful because it means hope.
Yeah, I think it's amazing because, I mean, this is what we need to alter, isn't it? This, the image of Colombia, it will take generations to change. Of course it will. I am still to this day to people who say, I'm from England, oh, hooligan. You know, it's one of those things. It takes generations. Of course, things like Narcos is not helping, but this will happen over time, and coffee will be at the fore of that because it will be the principal crop.
And it is, it's sad, I'm sorry to interrupt, it's sad because Colombians don't realize what gold it is. Like, coffee is our gold, you know? But then, like, being in Austin, people are like, oh, wow, you're from Colombia. Wow, coffee. And that was a thing that was like, you started to see a shift even in how people were greeting me. They weren't saying anymore like, oh, Colombia, you know, cocaine. They're like, oh, Colombia, coffee. They have amazing coffee. Of course, this is, we're in Austin, so coffee is what's important. And that's beautiful. But, like, still to this day, Colombians will prefer to pay really cheap for very low quality coffee instead of investing in, like, specialty world, which is where you come to help, like, the people who are down there in the farms, working the land, doing all the, like, caficultores and all that stuff. And so it's a, we're slowly but surely rising.
We're moving there, but of course there's also a taste for that, the stuff, let's say it's sold on the side of the street, or the stuff sold on the highway, you know, the trucker coffee. Quite weak, but with so much sugar in it that there's been, it's developed over time. But again, we're changing it, aren't we? We're changing it. The demand for good coffee in country, not always exported to Austin, is changing, because when I first moved here in 2007, there were so few specialty coffee shops. Yeah. Really, I mean, it was an exciting thing to see places open up. I can actually get something outside of Omar and Juan Valdez, that, you know, because Juan Valdez burns my coffee most of the time, and I notice it. You're like, this is burnt coffee, but, you know, whatever. So now you find, and especially in this area, where you can swing a cat and hit a coffee shop, really. Yeah. But it's great to see, and this is the thing, and it's so important. And that, I like that term, coffee goes hand in hand with peace. I like that. I hopefully that can go with cacao as well,
yes,
and other things. I mean, I think there's so much here in Colombia that can be done. There's so much. And how cool that you've brought your kids down, I know your husband, he's Colombian now. He's 6'4", white, but he's Colombian. He loves Colombia. You brought your kids down, so they're going to grow up in this culture. But do you see that as a long-term thing being here in Colombia, or what? Do you, I mean, how, this is a hard question.
No, it's not. We're going to be here for a long time. My husband is originally a petroleum engineer, and okay. he quit his life as a petroleum engineer to a certain extent in America, and. He opened like a little private company that he can do from here.
Okay.
So he still has some jobs that are like a one job type of thing that he'll do from home here. And that's how we balance things out a little bit. But that's low coming. It just started.
Yeah.
But yeah, we sold our home there. We don't have anything back in the States. I mean, we have our families, but really we told ourselves we're moving our lives to Colombia.
Wow.
And so I think it does change your mentality. Like when you're here for a short time, you're like, oh, I can adjust to anything because I have somewhere to go. But for us, I think until maybe they go to high school or even college, then we'll think about leaving. For right now, our mentality is set on we're here for a long, long time.
Excellent. So, well, it's good to hear because I like making friends with people who are here for the long run.
Yeah, that is hard because everybody leaves.
Everybody leaves. If you're in an expat community, it's like people are English teachers or short-term employees on contracts and they come and go and then it's like, oh, I've got to start again. That's why I try not to move so much in an expat community. Your husband is a petroleum engineer. That's what my father was. So very interesting. But Houston makes sense then.
I mean, yes.
And your children have taken well to it then?
It's been really hard, actually. I think they had a lot of emotional stress, and that, of course, is hard for mom and dad.
Of course, it reflects
we
you.
Not only like moved to Bogota, but we did surrender a lot of like the good things that we had, including like our money and things like that. We just got rid of everything, came here. And that's been a hard thing because we were living in a very nice community in Austin, Texas, and had all kinds of financial and things, you know, and we did that, like we chose to do that. So I'm not whining about it, but it was hard. And coming here and not knowing, really, I mean, I have family, but they are in a different thing. They're doing different things. I don't get to see them often. This city is huge and it takes forever to get to places. So we're basically on our own here.
Yeah.
And I think the kids had a hard time. One, because they've been really sick with their lungs. Pollution and altitude has really stressed them out as well. And so we've spent a lot of time in hospitals. And so that's been tough. And emotionally for them, I think just not being able to see their grandmother and their grandmothers and... You know, like our family. My sister has two kids that are the same ages as my kids, and they were growing up together.
Sure.
We actually, when we moved back from Africa, we moved into their home and we birthed our kids like together, and they lived together from the day they were born. And so that was really tough. But they're getting used to it now. And I think we have them in a school right now that is not so focused on they have to sit up straight and they have to, you know, hold the pencil a certain way like a lot of Colombian schools can be. They're focused a lot more on their well-being emotionally.
Right.
And we're paying for it. But it is a really awesome school. It's a good fit for them. And so I think I've seen a shift in their tantrums and things. And they're starting just now to get used to the idea of like, this is home.
So it's taking a year.
Yes. My youngest son would cry, Mom, I want to go home almost every night. And the thing is, like, he wouldn't say which home. You know, he wouldn't say like Austin or Houston or... But he would just say home, and his older brother would sit there and be like, this is your home, Matthew, you know, this is your toys, this is your bed. But for me, that was really heartbreaking, that he doesn't feel like he's home. So finding this new apartment that we just moved into, we prayed a lot, and Matthew asked, like, I want a place that I can call home. That was his prayer. And so when we found it, he said, Mom, this is our home. And so I knew, like, okay, we're home now, you know?
It happened, didn't it?
Yeah.
The switch.
It did.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. But you are talking about issues, obviously, that affect a lot of people when they decide to up. I mean, kids, of course, it's going to be hard, but amazingly, they can adapt. And they're with you as well. And so can I ask which school you sent them to?
Kidstown.
Oh, yeah, just here.
It's just right next door.
So very cool. That's very nice. We did look at that, actually. Very nice. You know where they are at any time. They're right next door, pretty much.
And this is why we chose to put them in that school because travel time in the city can be chaotic. Yeah. And so we can live a little bit farther from work, but having them right next to us, like, we can pick them up, bring them to the coffee shop. We have a kid area here, and so they can sit there and play with the chalkboard and stuff and be fine.
This is their second home.
Yeah. Really. And they look forward to coming to Social Coffee House all the time. So
this is great. Now let's talk about the Social Coffee House. Website, socialcoffeehouse.com?
.co.
You're on Facebook, you're on everything. Mm-hmm. It's a really great place to come. You started up, you've learned all about coffee. Now, I understand you're going to have specialty coffee days and tastings and stuff. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we're just now planning that. So we have found that, like I said earlier, a lot of people don't really know what is a specialty coffee and why is it different. You know, there's so many different varieties of coffee and all kinds of stuff. And even I'm still learning. I can't say that I've learned all about it. I'm still learning a bunch every day. And so what we want to do for our community is people that live around here and people who come from outside, like, given the opportunity to not do something so extreme to go get, like, certified, but just to come and have a tasting and just a basic cupping of coffees. And so in there you would try a regular coffee that you can buy at the store, like a supermarket in a bag already grind, and then compare to the rest. And like, you know, it's a little bit of we'll mix it in and you have to choose like what's the good one, what's the bad one. But it's amazing because you wake up your mouth to things that you never knew that could happen. And actually a lot of the coffee that you find at a grocery store here in Colombia is not good for you. It is the trash. It is what doesn't make it us being able to export, and so they sell it to your people. And so I happen to have all kinds of autoimmune disorders, and one of them allows me to recognize when there's something wrong in the coffee.
Really?
And so I break out into hives.
Wow.
And so it helps me out.
You're like the coffee whisperer.
Yeah.
The coffee whisperer.
So I might not be able to tell you exactly, you know, what kind of fruit is in this coffee, but I can tell you there's a mistake when there's one.
Wow.
And so it's really bad for your health. And so actually, like, the owner of Catación Pública, his goal and desire is to, like, Colombians to know how to drink good coffee, even just for health reasons. We drink so much coffee here.
Yeah.
And there's so much sickness here that I think that it has to be part of it. Like, there's, like, chemicals. There's, like, all kinds of, like, burnt rubber and all kinds of stuff that is wrong with this cheap coffee.
You're terrifying me.
Well, you know.
So you're making sure that we have to come to the Social Coffee House.
Yes.
Well, this is excellent. So when do we expect your cupping and tasting things to start?
I want to say that by the following weekend, not this weekend, but the next weekend, we're going to start, one, having live music Fridays and Saturday nights.
I'll come. I live close.
Maybe introducing some craft beers and then also starting cuppings.
You might have just to move me in the back here. It's like craft beers. You're actually turning the corner into Austin here.
I'm trying to break Austin into this place.
Well, this is great. Now, and I congratulate you heartily, you and Alex, on this. Now, the other day I came in and he said, I'm going to make you something special. It's got this kind of flavor. And I was so impressed because it did have, there was an aroma of vanilla that came out. It wasn't a vanilla scented coffee. It was just an aroma of vanilla that came through the grind. I mean, how cool is that?
It's beautiful.
I consume coffee. It's my vice. I mean, this is my proper vice. And I like good coffee because I can tell the difference between good coffee and bad coffee, but I am no expert. But I won't buy the stuff off the street because I just can't. And I can't have it when I go to meetings because it's just awful as well in offices here. It's not good. When I worked I lasted 12 days at a job in the alcaldía before quitting. The coffee there was so bad. I mean, clearly they just given someone a friend to provide. But I'm so happy that you're here. You seem happy, and I know with your children now feeling that they are home, that this must be a complete relief. You know, what a weight taken from your shoulders, which is now allowing you to enjoy it. And that's what we see with the tastings. You want to bring craft beer and live music. It's an evolution, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say, thank you, Stephanie, and of course Alex in the background. Thank you, Alex. Thank you for letting me host interviews here, and thank you for agreeing to be on the show and talking so openly about your story. It's been a real pleasure.
Absolutely. No, thank you for inviting me to be a part of it.
It's no problem at all. Listen, do check out, listeners out there, if you're coming to Colombia, check out the Social Coffee House. It's a really great place. You might even find me here. But Stephanie and Alex, one of the two or both, are here and they're open for a chat and they've got great coffee. And well, I'll be here for live music and craft beer, definitely, and for the cupping too. So remember, Social Coffee House. This has been Colombia Calling, episode 174. We've been talking to Stephanie. And of course, remember that this episode has been brought to you by Sitel Colombia. So check out their Facebook page. They have jobs for bilingual foreigners and locals. If you are bilingual, you are legal to work here in Colombia. Sitel can be the person, the company, the entity to employ you. Check out the Facebook page because they have their openings there and they have flexible contract terms and everything. So they're looking for bilingual workers. This has been Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McCall, episode 174. I know you've enjoyed this as much as I have. Thank you for listening and tune in again next week. Bye-bye.